citizens! Welcome to the Forks of Potitude. I'm Dave Michaels.
I'm Dave Novak.
Unbelievable. You can't even... Like, I understand that you're in his seat right now, mm-hmm. but you're your own person with your own thoughts.
No. I gave up thoughts a long time ago.
Is it because you watched Cats when you didn't have to watch Cats?
I'm very excited to talk about Cats tonight. I did the whole research on the Jellicle philosophy, Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber's whole cat universe. Let's fucking do this, man. Let's talk about Cats.
What is a fucking Jellicle?
Well, they explain it in the first song that you recall, right?
Because that's I've never seen that movie. Never seen the play. I think cats are stupid, just in general. Like, as a thing, I'm a dog person. I think cats are just like wannabe dogs. Don't also know how they got tied together. I understand domestic things, but fucking turtles can be domesticated too, can't they?
I guess anything could really be domesticated. People could be domesticated, right?
Whoa.
What? Who?
There was a war fought strictly about that, despite what some other people may think.
I thought that whole war was fought about states' rights. States' rights to what, people? Anyway, are we talking about cats? No, we're not talking about cats, are we?
Talking about cats. Welcome to BB Movie! It's the only movie show left in the world. World's destroyed, according to an alternate version of this movie, which I watched.
Yeah, apparently two versions of this movie.
Which we didn't know about.
No.
Independently watched each individual version. It's very exciting. This week, for our first crappy hour pick of the month, Dave, it was your pick.
I wanted to watch whatever this is, movie 43, knowing that I did not watch movies 1 through 42 beforehand. So I went into this completely blind, and I paid the price for it because I had no clue what the fuck was going on.
Had you ever seen this thing before?
Never. Never in my life did I ever see this. I had heard it was terrible. I heard that it was just a miracle that it was ever made, and all that held up. How about you? Did you ever see this thing?
I've seen this thing a few times now. And
really?
It's weird because it came out in 2013, and I could have sworn I saw this in college, and I was well out of college by this point.
Well, a lot of people go to college for 8 years, Dave.
Yeah, they're called doctors.
They're called That's doctors. Not me. Doctors of thugonomics, am I right, John Cena?
No. That's your one wrestling reference you're allowed.
Damn it. Wrong podcast. So wait, you've seen this multiple times.
Yeah, voluntarily
on purpose.
Too. On purpose.
On purpose.
Yeah, a couple of the first one I watched, I was genuinely curious. The second time I watched, I went, did that really happen?
So, all right. So this movie's been out for 11 years. So you've seen it how many times, would you say?
Three.
So that's once every 3.5 to 4 years. You've seen this basically with every presidential election since 2013.
Yes, that's kind of how I judge watching this movie.
You know what? Probably less painful than presidential elections, so good job.
It is. Once they start talking primaries, I'm just like, fuck, movie 43. Throw it on. My comfort movie for electoral primaries.
Yes. Everybody knows that this is the West Wing of political movie satire, something. Movie 43.
That's what they say. You want to get into this thing and figure out what this thing's going to score? It's crappy hour, so who knows how this is going to go in terms of highs, in terms of lows.
Does that mean whoever gets the low score wins for crappy hour week or month or whatever the hell we're in?
You know what? I like that game. I like that game quite a bit. Let's play that. Brian's not here to defend himself on anything. He has no say in how we dictate how this works.
Free shots at Brian all day.
So we score movies based on a scale that we've scientifically developed over the years. And we're usually awfully damn close to hitting it. Obviously, if we hit the Rotten Tomatoes critical or audience score, we got to pound our drink, and you should too, because it's a team sport. Movies are a team sport, right?
But this is an ensemble movie. This is a team movie.
It is an ensemble. Good segue, buddy, because the first category is casting.
Let's look at the cast. Let's talk about the cast. This has Elizabeth Banks. This has Kristen Bell, Halle Berry, Seth MacFarlane, Kate Bosworth, Anna Faris, Richard Gere, Terrence Howard, Hugh Jackman, Johnny Knoxville, Justin Long, Jeremy Allen White from the, what's that movie or that show he's in now with the Bears or something like that?
Yeah, the Bears.
Da Bears. Chloe Grace Moretz, Chris Pratt, Liv Schreiber. This movie has everybody. Emma Stone, Jason Sudeikis, Uma Thurman. Naomi Watts, Kate Winslet.
So it's probably an 11, weirdly, right?
So I don't believe in conspiracy theories about actors, you know, like every actor, they're all pedophiles, whatever. But there has to be a conspiracy theory. How did all of these people sign up for this movie?
Because Hugh Jackman said yes.
Is that really it?
That's really it. they showed the script for the first segment of this movie, the first sketch, because this is a segment slash sketch movie for the most part. They showed it to Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman read it and said, yeah, I'll do it.
That takes a lot of balls. That takes a lot of balls.
And then they pitched to Kate Winslet and said, Hugh Jackman's doing it. So she said, well, I kind of got to do it now, don't I? And then they shot that segment of the movie and used that show to the other A-listers to get them on board. And then what's better than that is they waited.
They waited.
They waited for the actors to become available to shoot, where they would ask an actor, do you want to do this thing? They said, I'm not going to be free for a year. They said, no problem. We'll wait. And that's how this movie ended up with 13 different directors, and it was shot over 4 years because they held the actors who said that they would do it in the future to doing it in the future.
That is brilliant. Do I want to say brilliant?
I don't know, but this thing's got to be an 11, right?
It's got to be an 11. And I'm even looking at the directors, like Steve Carr, Elizabeth Banks, Brett Ratner, James Gunn is a director on this thing.
Yeah, he did the Beazel part at the end. We'll talk about that.
Oh, do we have to?
We do, because I still haven't seen it, because I fell asleep
both
times trying to rewatch it. So you're
I was about to turn off this fucking movie, and then they had like scenes at the end. I know we're skipping ahead, but they had like outtakes at the end, and I saw an outtake. I'm like, I don't remember seeing that one, and then they suckered me right back in. They brought me right back the fuck in. So, yeah, 11.
Next up. It's story and motivation. And this is a segment sketch movie.
It is. And apparently, like we were discussing earlier, there are two tracks to this movie that I was not aware of. I thought there was just the one. I watched one and apparently you watched the other one. What was the one that you watched about?
The one I watched was called The Thread. And it was directed by Stephen Brill. And what it was is these two teens who create a video and they're trying to go viral. But their younger brother, who's like a computer nerd, hacks it, hacks their views and makes them appear that they go viral. He's like, April Fools. And then to get the little brother back, they say, we got to steal his computer and put porn on it. So it slows it down and gives him viruses. To which then they make up Movie 43, the most banned movie in the world. And the little brother gets so excited about trying to find this thing in the depths of the internet that he stumbles upon all of these other little movies along the way.
Huh. Okay, that is exactly not what I watched. So I watched it was called The Pitch. So you had Dennis Quaid as a writer who basically invades this guy, played by Greg Kinnear's office, trying to get his movie made. And he just keeps on throwing these different crazy stories out that Greg Kinnear keeps on rejecting until Dennis Quaid pulls a gun on Greg Kinnear, and Greg Kinnear is trying to, I guess, not get shot, but then he's being cucked by Common, who's playing the studio producer.
Oh my God.
And then what makes me sad about this is that you missed, and I will be honest about this, you missed my favorite line in this movie, because this movie, as bad as it is, Dave, I got to be honest with you, there were some times I guffawed. I laughed out loud. I LOL'd. I nearly raffled.
Bud, same.
Thank God. Thank God. This is my shame. This is my shame. And I'm very excited to see where our laughs lined up and where they didn't. But yeah, so two different tracks, but I think all the same stories and segments, right?
I think so. Because, I mean, as the thread develops and they keep going deeper and deeper into these movies, trying to find Movie 43... there's some sort of terrorist organization that's trying to stop them from finding Movie 43. And like one brother is in the bathroom, like getting all the porn. He ends up on a cougar website at one point. And naturally, when you're on a cougar website, you rub one out. I mean, you're not just going to go to a cougar website and keep your hands to yourself. That's not how it works.
Yeah, I rub one out to cougars, to fennec foxes, occasionally gophers. Yeah.
No, this is a cougar is an older woman, not a furry type thing.
Oh. Sorry, you can edit that out in post, right?
Yeah, I will. Totally will. One of the best bits of this movie about The Thread is that the cougar website that this guy ends up jerking off to, he discovers later that it's his mom. And it's fantastic.
Okay, well, do we... Jesus.
I mean, we're so deep into this movie at that point that you're just like, yeah, of course it's his mom, because that's where this movie had to go. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And then the world ends up ending, because of course it has to. But are you ready to talk about other segments besides the weak through line that they had to throw into this thing to facilitate segments?
Yes, but no. I just want to say my favorite line in the entire movie that you did not see. Will Sasso plays a security guard, and apparently
God, I love him.
Oh, he's so good. But the way Dennis Quaid snuck his way into the studio is that he sucked Will Sasso's dick forcibly. So at the end of the movie, Greg Kinnear has a gun to Will Sasso because he's trying to get Common to approve this movie. And he tells Common to suck Will Sasso's dick. And Will Sasso has a line, something along the lines of, "I picked a really bad morning to jerk off in the shower." And I thought that was hilarious. That was,
oh my God.
And with that being said, now I think we can get into it with what was my first segment, and I believe hopefully your first segment. Something called The Catch, starring Hugh Jackman and Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet is a girl about town who's just trying to find a man. And she gets set up on this blind date with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, the Hugh Jackman, the city's most eligible bachelor. And everything seems to be going great. He's a charity man. He's very successful. He's on magazines. But when they arrive together at the restaurant, Beth is shocked when Hugh Jackman removes his scarf. There's a pair of testicles dangling from his neck. And I wrote to myself a note saying, oh, this is going to be the entire joke for this entire segment.
And it was. And the thing about it is like, yeah, there's a shock factor there of Hugh Jackman playing this blind date scene totally naturally, just with a giant sack of testicles hanging down from his chin. It's kind of like the hanging skin that you have below your neck, like your little rooster pouch there, but instead it's just balls. It's just balls. It's not so much balls on your chin, like Will Sasso made whoever it was in whatever you watch do. This is, they're dangling. Because at one point, he does complain that it is too cold in the restaurant and his ball neck does shrivel up.
That, yep, they shrivel up. He's getting soup on it. He's dipping soup in it. He's rubbing it against Kate Winslet's forehead when one of his friends comes by and he wants to take a picture.
No one is acknowledging the balls on the neck. No one. And Kate Winslet is disgusted by it. No one is talking about the balls.
Which, let me ask you this. If you went on a date with Hugh Jackman and he took off his scarf and there's just some balls hanging there, would you be cool with it? Because I think I'd be fine.
I'd be totally fine with it. Because my biggest question is, are those just upper balls or do you have two sets of balls? I need to know how you work now.
So when he's bored, is he just scratching his neck or is he scratching beneath his legs?
I don't know. I don't know because we don't know if Kate Winslet has lost her mind or if everyone's just so accepting of his ball neck.
Oh, so you think that this might be even a scenario where Kate Winslet's so stressed out with this date, she's just imagining balls on this guy's neck?
I don't know. I mean, there's probably no explanation for it. This is just an excuse to put balls on Hugh Jackman's neck.
Yeah, I'm going to say the movie probably didn't go that deep. Unlike those balls, am I right? They were going pretty balls deep.
Kate Winslet wouldn't allow it.
No.
She's so grossed out, and I love Kate Winslet so much in this movie.
She's such a good actress, and it looked like they were having a fucking lot of fun, but boy, this joke wears off pretty quick.
It does, and it does, escalate its way gradually, up to getting balls on her face.
Yes, yes. So I guess this is the second time I've seen Kate Winslet balled out in a movie. The first time was Titanic, and the second time was this.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
She's got range, I guess.
She's great. Hugh Jackman's great. This segment, ballsy.
That is the layup that you could have taken there. You chose to take it, and I appreciate that. Fundamentals in basketball are very important. The next segment's called Homeschool.
Jesus.
This one broke me.
This one, I'm not going to lie, this one made me laugh a couple times. This one made me laugh.
Liv Schreiber and Naomi Watts have their new neighbors over, and they're explaining homeschooling because they're homeschooling their son, who is played by Jeremy Allen White.
And I'm assuming we're leaving the fucking out for everybody's name in this movie, right? There's no fucking involved.
Oh, this got an 11. Everyone's fucking.
Okay, so just assume if we're saying a name, there's fucking involved, which is a weird transition for this one because they, being the parents, are trying to give Jeremy Allen White, the bear, the best full high school experiences possible. So they haze him, they bully him, they ostracize him, they give him detentions. Liv Schreiber throws a ball at Jeremy Allen's face during gym time outside. Naomi Watts wants to make sure that he has a first kiss that's very romantic.
Oh, God, so it's so weird. And Jeremy Allen White is just dead inside throughout this entire thing. Or at least he's portraying it. But they want to give him his real high school experiences to the point that Naomi Watts does kiss her own son and then ask if he has protection. And then the next scene, Liv Schreiber is sitting next to him on the bed also. And he goes, you know, I don't like guys, but if I did, you might be my type.
Which we've all said to our friends, right? We've all said that.
We've all been there.
I think the bullying is probably the best part of this skit, where he gets called fuckface. He gets told that he has weird pubes, and then he gets taped to a flagpole. And when asked what his superpower would be, he says, "My superpower would be sucking dicks."
Of course, of course. And the punchline there is that he's got shit smeared all over him too.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that, the punchline. But I love the house party that they throw just to not let him into the house.
It's so
like the parents are throwing this giant high school sized house party, and he has to come knock on the door. And he's like, "Mom, come on, come on." He goes, "Oh, no. You know that girl that you kind of like talked to that one time? It would just be super awkward. So, no." And then she closes and goes back to the party.
And did you miss the part? The dad is making out with the girl.
The buy-in here is just so good.
This one, I'm not going to lie, this one kind of worked for me. It was really fucked up, but this one kind of worked for me.
Well, the punchline of the entire sketch is Jeremy Allen White comes downstairs and meets the neighbors, and he acts totally normal. He says, "I'm going to take Jennifer out to the movies, and we'll be back when we're back." And the mom's just like, "Yeah, good. Have a great time." The neighbors kind of smile, like, this kid's totally normal. And then he pulls out a mop that's dressed as a girl and makes the girl say, "I'm so pretty."
What I liked about this kid is that that was very relatable to my high school dating experience as well. Just dating a lot of mops and brooms, dustpans, not garbage cans. They were a little bit too out of my league. But, you know, like the things that moved around trash, that was me.
Yeah, New Jersey, you kind of have to move it somehow. So
we don't have trash in New Jersey. We throw it to Staten Island.
Staten Island does suck really hard.
It does. I feel like everybody hates Staten Island.
And they should, because it's like, oh, we're New Yorkers. It's like, yeah, but barely. Barely.
Listen, I have very strong opinions on Staten Island, and don't get me started on Long Island. And I say that with no disrespect to your Islanders, but Long Island, make up your mind. Are you New England? Are you New York? You have Brooklyn on there. You have Queens. What are you? You're just a very Long Island. That's boring.
It's very long. It's not just a clever name. Long Island. It takes like 2 hours to get off of Long Island if you're on the far east side of it. And those people there, you're just like, you're not traveling off that island for a lot of your life. You're stuck.
No. And nobody knows what happens on the east part of that island. It is a mystery.
No one. No one.
It's like the fog. You go into it, you don't come back out.
People go there in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and they have to erase their memories because they can't fucking believe what they saw.
Yeah. By the way, Eternal Sunshine, better movie than movie 43.
Not by much.
Not by much.
Not by much.
You know what? The cast, not as good.
No, weirdly. Even though Kate Winslet, also there.
Oh, yeah. Great point. So, yeah, this one was, I'll be honest, this one made me laugh out loud.
We're two for two right now.
But I'm going to be honest with you. The next one literally made me guffaw out loud. And I want to see if it was at the same scene, that if you laughed, if it was the same one. Because the next one is called The Proposition, starring everybody's favorite Hollywood couple. I haven't kept up with them for a while, but Chris Pratt and Anna Faris. I think they're still doing well, right?
You know what, Dave? Sure. Let's good. Go with sure. You're having a good night. Sure. They're doing great.
Great. Thank you. So, Chris and Anna, they are in a relationship and they're at a picnic, and Chris wants to ask Anna something and Anna wants to ask Chris something. They decide to ask each other at the same time.
But they don't, because Chris Pratt is a fucking liar.
Wait, what do you mean?
He doesn't ask at the same time. Anna Faris very clearly gets her line out.
Great point. You know what? What a plot hole in this movie. This kind of ruins the whole thing for me.
It kind of makes the whole movie fall apart right here.
Oh, boy.
Because we need to hear Anna Faris's joke. Is it Anna or Anna? I never know.
Oh, I've been... this is the North Jersey in me. Everything is Anna, but it probably would be Anna.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Of course.
The little plumber boy who jumps into boxes who goes, yeah! What? Woo-hoo!
Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me.
What is his name?
Fuck you. That's what it is.
No, this is a real question because my wife picks on me about this. What is his name?
His name is Mario.
I agree.
Yes.
Moving on.
Thank you.
The thing that Anna Faris asked Chris Pratt is, will you poop on me?
Not shit, by the way. Not shit.
You don't shit. Shit is what you do to a whore, as J.B. Smoove says in this movie.
Which, by the way, J.B. Smoove, surprisingly amazing in that role.
J.B. Smoove is doing his best J.B. Smoove, and I love J.B. Smoove.
It was very good. So obviously that question takes Chris Pratt by surprise.
Hold on.
What? What I miss?
on Wikipedia, there's a word for it. When you poop on someone, it's called a coprophiliac.
Coprophiliac?
And what comes up is a picture of...
of a chair!
What looks to be like a chair, like a lounger type thing, with a hole cut into it.
It's called the smother box. Oh my god, this goes
smother
on.
Box?
There's a... oh my god!
If a girl ever asks you to go to a smother box, just say, what'd you have for lunch? Because it's really important that you know that.
So, the link from movie 43 leads to coprophilia, which leads to face sitting. And there's a drawing of face sitting by Heinrich Lossow between 1843 and 1897. Wow. There's a lot of pictures on this one.
Yeah, there's also a drawing of a Russian coprophiliac. It's sort of like erotica. And It's depicting, I'm going to read it word for word here. It's depicting defecation on a sleeping victim. One definition of the term is a hot Carl.
By the way, there's two designs here for smother boxes. One is a traditional style. The other one, Baroque. Depends on how you're feeling fancy that night.
The whole joke of this thing is that she wants to get pooped on.
I mean, who doesn't want to get pooped on a little bit, right? Like, not a lot, but a little bit.
Yeah, it is how you go to the next level, again, according to our Lord and Savior, J.B. Smoove.
Yes.
But I like how he's sitting in the bathroom, eating a burrito, and then downs an entire bottle of laxative, and he goes into the bedroom, and he's already starting to toot up a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wants foreplay. And man, Chris Pratt is doing what he does best here and just draws out the joke.
He is very good in this, by the way. I hate to say it, but for a man who's trying to sell that he really has to poop, not shit, poop, he's doing a great job.
Well, he gets to the point that he can't hold it anymore. So he yells at her and says, "God damn it, let me shit on you," to which she gets offended, as she should, because you don't shit on your soon-to-be wife. You poop
on her. No, you don't do that. You poop. Poop. Shit's for horse. So she runs out, he chases after her, and Dave, I guffawed. I guffawed. Because he gets hit by a car, and he shits all over the windshield, and he puts his wiper on right after.
It's so good watching the smear!
It's the dumbest, most crass joke. Like an old man slapping his knee, I was like, aha! That's great.
Well, it got even better because then Anna Faris just like, was all this for me? It's the most perfect punchline you could have for this stupid, stupid segment. She calls it the most beautiful thing she's ever seen and then accepts his marriage proposal.
You know what didn't have coprophilia? Cats. Except for that one scene.
I wouldn't... What? Ho, 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 ho.
And nope, you don't know.
You're making me curious. I don't appreciate that.
Don't be curious, Dave.
This pains me that we're 3 for 3 right now.
Yes, 3 for 3. 3 for 3.
And we're about to be 4 for 4.
Oh my god. So, the next one, Veronica. Now, have you watched Succession on HBO?
I love Succession on HBO.
Because I feel like Kieran Culkin was working his best Roman Roy at this point.
Oh, without a doubt. This is probably where it got formed.
This is it. This is it. So, Veronica, the next skit. It stars Kieran Culkin and Emma, a.k.a. Emily Stone.
No one calls her that. No one calls her that.
But she wants to be called that, she says.
I got a pretty good feeling she doesn't at this
point. No, I saw it online. It has to be true.
But fair enough.
So Neil is working the night shift at a grocery store when his ex-girlfriend Veronica comes in and they begin arguing, and every fucking line made me laugh.
And the best part about it is that he's doing the intercom thing, talking about sales, and then just doesn't turn it off. So everyone in the store is hearing the conversation too. But everything they say is more ridiculous than the last thing that they say.
One of my favorite lines is, "How's your HPV?" And Kieran Culkin says, "It's your HPV, Veronica. I'm just carrying it."
It's just the most quotable scene in this entire movie.
"I can't believe you fucked a hobo." "Hobo, he was a wizard." And then, "I want to give you a hickey on your vagina." And one of the best lines to end it with, "I'll see you in church."
I love how offended. "I'll see you in church." Oh.
Yep. Yep.
It's wonderful. This one, go find this one on YouTube. If you watch nothing else from this movie, this is something special.
The more I watched this movie, the more ashamed I became of myself, because I was laughing at parts. And maybe I'm a bad person. Am I a bad person?
I mean, for a lot of other reasons, yes. But not so much for laughing at this movie, because so far, 4 for 4. Ready to go 4 for 5?
Boy, am I ready, because this next one is...
It's not good.
No.
This is the one that's not good. It's called The Eye Babe, and it's basically just a naked lady with a headphone coming out of her chest or whatever, and you get to listen to music on it.
This was a very in the moment, if you remember those old iPhone or iPod commercials, this was it. But if you were born after the year 2000, you're out of luck. You don't know what the fuck this is.
The entire bit is that an Apple-like company has developed the iBabe. It's a new revolutionary music player. But the issue is that they had to put a vent on this naked lady, and they put it, obviously, in the vagina.
Right in the vagina.
So now teen boys are getting their dicks all mangled because they're trying to fuck the iBabe.
I think we agree, this one, not the best skit. That being said, when one of the scientists asks if it's safe and he raises his hands up to say yes and he's missing a hand, that got me. That was pretty good.
I think my favorite part about this is Kate Bosworth's like, I mean, of course this was going to happen, guys. Of course it was going to happen. And Jack McBrayer is like the scientist of it. He goes, no, we never saw this coming. And Richard Gere is the head of the company. He goes, no, I don't even understand what you're talking about right now.
Richard Gere's in this movie.
And Asif Mavi is also in this scene, and he's just a yes man. They're just leaning into everything that Richard Gere says. And I like how they reveal the new model. And all it is just an African-American girl. And he says, you know, you can pick a color.
Yep. Oh, Sphere goes back to the big joke in the beginning. This is when the movie starts getting a little offensive, I think. A little offensive.
Yeah, just starting now. The next one hit me right where I like to be hit, right in the cape. Robin is trying to date. Robin as in Batman and Robin. And it's Justin Long, and he's wearing the Robin costume.
And not a good one, like a really shitty one, which makes it a lot funnier.
Well, it gets even shittier and funnier when Jason Statham interrupts his date by just lying to the girl across the way because he thinks it's funny. And it's basically Batman ruining Robin's speed dates.
Yes, he thinks he's going to be his Cyrano, which he says, I don't know who that is. I was thinking more Roxanne, which gave me a very good laugh as a Steve Martin fan.
Lois Lane's going to pop up in the speed date. She doesn't remember Robin at all, even though they've worked together 1,000 times, but she remembers Batman. So Batman, again, ruins the date. But then Supergirl shows up. Kristen Bell as Supergirl. Yes, please.
That was doing things for me, by the way. That was doing a lot for me because she is looking super. And she seems into this date, too. Like, right? Like, she's kind of flirting with Robin a little bit. I think she feels it. But you have Batman that's kind of ruining things because he is hiding underneath the table trying to feed lines to Robin. And when she catches Batman doing that, he asks, is that because of your super vision? And she says, no, it's because you're sitting underneath a fucking cafe table.
Yeah, it's great. And he's just talking about her bush the entire time.
A lot of bush talk in this one, and not the bands.
But it turns out Batman's there because the Penguin, of course, planted a bomb.
The Penguin played by John Hodgman, which was delightful.
Nearly perfect castman. And Leslie Bibb, as Wonder Woman, shows up also to kind of try to save the day.
Yep.
Also, fantastic. Bobby Cannavale shows up as Superman. Fantastic.
I didn't realize that was Bobby Cannavale. Holy shit. This movie's got everybody. So yeah, Robin saves the day, though. The Penguin's got a bomb, and he gets to make out with Superwoman afterwards, and it all ends great, right? Right?
No, it doesn't, because it turns out that Superwoman was actually Will Carlo, the Riddler, just with a mask on. And Batman recognized that this was a man so early on in this date, but he let it play out anyway.
Nobody has a bush that big, that's why. Not unless you're trying to hide something.
I love that sketch, which is good because the next sketch is stupid as shit.
Yeah, the next one we can just skip right over. It's Machine Kids. It's about kids that are stuck in machines, something, something, something. I don't know. I didn't get it. It was over my head. It was below my head. It was stupid. Done.
It kind of felt like a Sarah McLachlan puppies thing, but with kids and like vending machines and ATMs and stuff. It was real dumb.
It was not great. The next one, I'm going to say, also not great. I think it was trying to say something, and it was saying it a little bit too loud. So
this is the Elizabeth Banks-directed middle school date, and this one has Christopher Mintz-Plasse, McLovin. Let's just call him what he is. Chloe Grace Moritz and Patrick Warburton, Matt Walsh are in it, and some kid named Jimmy Bennett, who definitely didn't have a career after this.
Yeah, happy to see Matt Walsh after Veep, or before Veep? After Veep? Before Veep? One of those. Time is a flat circle. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Jimmy Bennett, whoever the hell he is, and Chloe are hanging out. She gets her period. It's
That's the joke.
Yeah, that's the whole joke.
That's the joke. And that surrounded by men, Patrick Warburton's a man. There's the joke. We did it.
Yeah, that's it. That's about it. That's men don't know anything about periods, blah, 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 blah. Then they watch a Tampax commercial. Somebody gets eaten by a shark. There's a message to be had. Moving on.
Happy birthday.
Jesus. Okay.
It's the Brett Ratner one. He's a problematic human being, we all know. But in this one, you got Johnny Knoxville, Sean William Scott, they're best friends. And Sean William Scott's moving out, but it is his birthday. So Johnny Knoxville gets him a leprechaun.
And when I was reading the cast list for this, I was like, oh, this person's not in this movie. This is a mistake. I did not realize until this fucking moment the leprechaun is Gerard Butler.
The leprechaun's Gerard Butler.
So this turns into a, I would say, kind of what, a Quentin Tarantino Reservoir Dogs type scenario where they're trying to get the gold from this leprechaun.
But they got Trojan golded by another leprechaun.
Yes. So, again, this one, I hate to say it. This one made me fucking laugh. So this is what a dead man sounds like when the leprechaun calls.
The leprechauns were so offensive.
They were really into balls, those leprechauns. A lot of ball torture. Yes.
Leprechauns famous for their ball play. Yeah. But basically what happens is Johnny Knoxville and Sean William Scott got to beat the shit out of these leprechauns, and it's super duper bloody. They end up cutting them up and they go, oh, there's not as much to think, because they carry the garbage bags full of leprechauns out. And then Johnny Knoxville remembers there's a second part to the gift. A magical fairy.
And what does that fairy do?
Gives blowjobs for gold coins.
So dumb and so great. It's so dumb. I hate myself. Dave, I hate myself. Why'd you make me do this? It's so funny. It sucks.
You made me do it. This was your pick. This was all your pick.
You should have watched Cats, you jerk off. Ghost of Roger Ebert. Haunted my ass.
Got you, man.
Haunted my ass.
Yeah, it did. And you want to know what haunts my ass?
What?
Stephen Merchant in Yellowface.
So, I gotta say, this one, boy, when this one came out, I was looking at the clock, I was looking at the runtime.
Oh, it's long. This is where the movie starts feeling long, but this is Halle Berry and Stephen Merchant in a sketch called Truth or Dare, and they're on a date, and they want to play Truth or Dare with each other, so they do, but their dares are so over the top, and they just keep escalating. For instance, the first dare that happens is that Halle Berry makes Stephen Merchant go cup a guy's ass who's standing at the bar. And he doesn't. He gets punched. Fine. Yes. But Stephen Merchant comes back and he says, I got to raise the stakes, and says, I dare you to go blow out the birthday candles of that blind kid.
And then it goes on from there. They get plastic surgery. They get tattoos. Halle Berry gets a breast augmentation. Stephen Merchant gets plastic
surgery. An Asian man augmentation? I don't know what it's called. He makes himself Asian.
Yeah. So, Dave, you see Breakfast at Tiffany's, right?
Yep.
Fantastic movie, I would say, right?
Yep.
Little racist in the sense that you have a certain actor playing Yellowface, right?
Yep. Sure.
I think this movie might be a little bit more offensive.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
Anyway, they deform their bodies on this first date. They go back. Stephen Merchant tries to kiss Halle Berry. Halle Berry says she's not into Asian men.
That would have been a great punchline!
But she closes the door. He turns around to leave. She opens it up and she shows her enlarged breasticles, and they presumably, I don't know, fall into the seventh circle of hell, because it is just a terrifying prospect to picture it. Dave, what was the worst first date you ever had?
The worst first date that I ever had was, there was this girl in high school I had a crush on, and she said, why don't you come down to my family's shore house this weekend? And I said, that sounds like a kick-ass idea. Of course I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And I go there, and her dad showed up early enough that it didn't make it awkward in the way that you think it would be awkward, but annoying enough that he just stayed the entire time.
Oh, how old are you?
I was 18.
Oh, yeah.
I was in my prime.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't know. I've never been in my prime, but that sounds nice.
When you get there, you'll know. You'll know you arrived.
There's nothing more uncomfortable than 18-year-old having to communicate with a grown man. What do you guys talk about?
I can tell you, you don't talk about a whole lot because of how awkward it is. Bravo for him. Yeah. He played a good daddy. But oh shit, man, driving an hour and a half to be in an awkward situation, that's not what I ever want in my life.
Yeah, now I hear that. My most awkward date was, I went out with this beautiful girl. She was lovely, but she didn't want to have any small talk. She just wanted to talk about truth and dare. So somehow I ended up becoming an Asian man.
Yeah, I mean, I've been wondering how it happened this entire time, and yeah. I've known you for years.
Yeah, I used to be called the ginger skull. Not so much anymore.
Not so much?
Not so much. No, I've never had a bad date. I'm always a good time. So I can't relate to that.
In a weird way, it's appropriate that this movie got racist because of where it's going.
Oh, yeah. This kind of ends on the racist pinnacle. This is the Mount Everest of racism at this last segment.
It's a sketch called Victory's Glory, and it's Terrence Howard talking to his 1950s basketball team, all black, about, you know, overcoming and winning. And then pretty much the entire punchline is him yelling at his team, like, you guys are black. The team that we're playing, they're all white. This should be no problem, guys. And that's the joke.
If you want to hear a bunch of stereotypes in a, we'll call it a what, a 5 or 6 minute segment, this might be impressive enough in its own achievement of having the most stereotypes in a compacted amount of time. This is like an episode of Kill Tony. This is like, it's a stereotype after bad joke. This is borderline impressive, but just dragged fucking on forever.
It did. This is not a good one. And the last one I haven't seen, it's called Beazle because it's the mid-credit scene directed by James Gunn, but also James Gunn's never seen it.
Wait, really?
Yeah, he made this thing and they wouldn't let him edit it. So he said, fuck it. I don't need to see this.
This might be the worst one.
It's a cartoon cat. Story and motivation.
Two? One? I don't know. I don't even know how to judge this. Some stories were actually kind of funny. But if you look at this as a whole movie, it makes no sense. Because at least with my thread, with the writer and the producer, it ends with them just breaking the fourth wall and talking to the people that are actually filming the movie. That's it. There's no resolution to this movie.
And mine ends with them looking at a video from the future about the young kid nerd getting the girl and saving the world, but also dying. And also the other brother bones the mom. And it's very weird. Two is fine. I'm fine with that.
Wait, that's how it ends in yours? Are you sure that's not Dune 2?
It might be Dune 2. This could be like the intro to Paul.
Yeah, the spice is flowing, brother. The spice is flowing. Two, yeah.
Protagonist. Zero.
Zero.
Antagonist. Zero.
Zero.
Director. There's 13 of them.
So 13 times zero would be...
There's a couple that I liked.
Okay. Name them.
Let me open up the Wikipedia page again. How about two? Does two feel right?
All right. Some of the direction made me laugh, and it looked like everybody was having a fun time, too.
Style and tone.
So this is a tough one, because...
Is it?
Well, the movie has style. The movie has tone.
It does it again.
But... I'm not saying it's good style and good tone, but it's definitely, this is the most unique movie I think I've ever seen.
You need to watch more movies, my friend.
No, when I say unique, I can't name another movie that is as weird as this movie in terms of how many stars are in it and how bad it is, even though it tries its dear little heart out. So I'm not saying it's good style or good tone, but there's something there. It's like when you see like a horrific piece of like animal flesh on the side of the road, and it's just an animal that just got fucking ripped apart on the turnpike. It's bad to look at, but you still look at it, right?
You're always curious. And you're kind of trying to figure out what animal it is. You get closer, and you're just like driving up. You're like, that looks like a deer. That looks like a deer. And you get
it looks
closer,
like a deer.
Like, oh, maybe it was a deer.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a jackalope, or maybe it's a, I don't know, something, but...
A jackalope?
A jackalope, yeah. That's
where you're going. It's a jackalope.
This movie's a jackalope. You know what? This movie is a jackalope. It is bits and pieces of different animals combined into one horrific, monstrous, fake, mythical, possibly deadly animal. Maybe just the two. You're right. Just the two. Silent tone. This is nothing. This is nothing.
Speaking of, screenplay, because this feels like we're living in that kind of range also.
Oh, no. Okay. So... There were lines and scenes in this movie, like I said, that made me guffaw, laugh out loud. There were other things like I, Babe, and the Machine Kids, and Middle School Date. Some of this is just like things that I would have written as like an 18-year-old thinking I was very witty, and it just turned out I was fucking not witty. So, I don't know, three? I mean, this is really bad. Victory's Glory is a bad thing that was written. It was not a good thing.
A lot of this wasn't a good thing.
Beazle, not a good thing. Truth or Dare, more offensive than Breakfast at Tiffany's, not a good thing.
That's such a weird baseline.
I use that baseline for everything in life.
That's a good point.
I judge everything on a scale from moon to river, right? If it's an M or an R. By the way, Audrey Hepburn, surprisingly not in this movie. Probably because she's dead. She is dead, right?
Oh, she's super dead.
I'm thinking, writing, there's a lot of offensive, bad just stuff that I can't even say it didn't age well, because it's only 2013. It shouldn't have been aging well back then. Two? Three?
I'm okay with a two. More than okay with a two.
We'll give it a soft two.
In true Dave Novak fashion, soft two. Next up is music. Oh. I don't remember any of it.
There's music in the Beazle skit, and it's awful. Negative one.
Wow. I actually can't argue that, because, again, I tried watching it, the Beazle skit, alone, And it was like late at night. I was like, man, I forgot to watch the Diesel skit. Like, I know it's there. And both times I tried after, I fell asleep.
I was about to turn the movie off and it kept on going. By the way, speaking of keep on going, there's two more segments in this. Find Our Daughter, starring Tony Shalhoub, God bless him.
And Julianne Moore, directed by Bob Odenkirk.
And then there's another one, The Apprentice, with Anton Yelchin, may he rest in peace, Shane Jacobson, some other people. These were not good enough to be in the main movie.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay, that is a problem.
You know what else is a problem?
What?
Box office.
I have zero prediction for this. I did not look to see how much this movie cost. I can't imagine it made any money, but maybe I'm wrong.
This movie cost $6 million to make.
Which is outstanding for the cast in this. How did that only cost $6 million?
The bigger problem is that it made $32.4 million, which is 543% gain, which gives this movie a 10.
A perfect 10. This movie made money for the studio. It made money. This is a success.
It made money. It's a big success.
And you know what? I wonder how much DVD sales might have grown after the box office, though. Because you know there's like a bunch of Stone College kids that probably had this movie, right?
Without a doubt. My wife knew the DVD cover of this movie. She's never seen this thing before, but she knew it right away when I told her I was watching this.
How did she know this?
I don't know.
Because your wife seems like a great person.
She is. Unless she's secretly a horrible person, which actually checks out.
No. She doesn't listen to this, right?
No, say what you need to.
I would never.
Yeah, that's a 10 for box office. That's going to bring us to the final category, the impact on the industry.
So, again, it depends on how you interpret impact, because this is considered one of the worst movies of all time.
That's the idea for the whole month.
This won 3 awards at the Razzies, including Worst Picture. It's on every list that I saw when I was looking for worst movies for this month. I want to say it should be high, but now I feel like nobody even remembers this movie. It was so bad, it's just out of people's existence.
I'm okay giving this thing a 1, because when you bring it up, people weirdly go, all right, that.
Yes, this is not like The Room. This is not like Plan 9 from Outer Space, where people still talk about it. I feel like this is just out of the public consciousness. So let's give it a 1. I'm cool with that.
I have a really good feeling we're over on this thing from the Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I have to imagine. We gave this thing 10s and 11s in places.
Don't use we. I didn't do anything.
That's a good point. Our total score for movie 43 is a 32.
Wow. One digit below each one. That's pretty good.
Give you an idea of where that thing lands. Earth Girls Are Easy a couple weeks ago got a 28. So this was technically better.
This might be more of a musical than Earth Girls Are Easy too.
Everything's more of a musical than Earth Girls Are Easy. If you go in the Wayback Machine to a year ago and we talked about Only the Strong, that got a 35. That's criminal. That movie's so good.
Oh, okay.
But it also scored a lot higher than Jack and Jill, because Jack and Jill got a 20. Still probably our lowest one, I think.
Jack and Jill, did that beat Spawn?
Everything beats Spawn. That movie sucks everything. God, I hate that movie. I don't hate a lot of movies. I hate that movie.
But you made friends with John Leguizamo out of it, so you're welcome.
We did, weirdly.
Isn't that weird?
We did, weirdly.
Isn't it weird? I was on Spawn. I was on Garfield. I was on Garfield 2. I was on Catwoman. All those movies, except for Spawn, have a cat as a central character.
You know what?
What?
Brian's not here.
He's not, no.
Which means we can kind of get to do whatever we want while he's not here. Are you free next week?
As it turns out, I think I might be able to make some availability next week. Yeah.
That's good, because next week is my pick. And you want to know what movie I want to beer everybody?
I would love to know what movie you want to beer everybody.
It's the movie you guys have wanted for over a month now. And Brian can't tell me no. Because next week, like the gentleman in the bathroom told me that one time in that bookstore there in the shitting episode, fuck Brian. Next week, we're talking Cats.
You have got to be kidding me.
You didn't watch it for no reason, my friend. Now we got to make Brian watch this thing. And also, I guess I got to suffer too. But you know what? It's only a cool hour 50. How bad could it be?
Get ready to lose your position in time and space, because it all goes out the fucking window with that movie.
Weirdly curious. I finally get to have my answers. And all of you, especially the patrons, because half of the Ebert list last month was Cats. You're getting your wish. I'm a giver. I'm a giver. You all know that.
This
I'm a
man
giver.
Gives. He gives and he gives. Just wait until you see. I'm so excited to talk about Cats with somebody. It's been bottled up inside me for like 3 weeks.
Next week, we're talking Cats. But until then, Be sure to rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on Facebook at Beer Me a Movie. Just type it in. Click on the first thing you see. Hopefully it's us. You can go on to Pornhub. We finally are there. There's very exciting porn things.
Fantastic.
It's mostly Brian not knowing that there's a camera on him all the time.
I know. I subscribe, and that's how I've gotten my Baroque Smotherbox.
I can't believe we learned about Smotherboxes in this episode. The more you know. Do.
Yeah, I almost got to traditional. I decided to go for Baroque.
And be sure to give us your picks for your bad movies for this month. Because obviously the last week of every month, the Ghost of Roger Ebert picks off the random list. We got a whole bunch already. There's some really, really good ones there. You can email us your picks or whatever you want to talk about at beermeamoviepod@gmail.com. That's what Phil Hot Take Hawkins did, and he added a couple bangers to that list this month.
Oh, boy.
If you're an adult, type in Beer Me a Movie somewhere, and you'll find us. It's not that hard.
It's all on the internet.
Dave, thanks so much for joining me on this one. It was your pick. Yeah, I mean, I'm technically joining you, I feel like, but man, what a pick.
Thank you. And I'm super excited when we finally get to cover Movie 44 when that gets released at some point.
One day.
I'm sure. One day. Let's talk about some horny cats, baby.
Are they horny?
I think so. You be the judge.
God, I'm going to get my gesticles off. I can't wait.
Oh.
Next week, we're talking cats. We'll see you then.